Reading from the Jiva Dharma, Chapter Jiva and Maya. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Taksur Mulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Zapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Shindu Bhayebhya Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So greetings from Govardhan. I'm back in Govardhan. I guess one of the main reasons is because it's the only place I really have to stay now. I go to Vrindavan, I have to, at this time, until I get some other place, generally rent something. But also they have the Govardhan retreat with Borijan Prabhu and Satchidananda Prabhu. So try to attend one of those lectures a day. So we're in this discussion with Vrajanath. I think we have a pretty steady group, and we know the basic context of the theme. Maybe I only need to repeat that once every 2 weeks or once a month. But we're following Vrajanath as he's coming to Krishna consciousness. And he's met his guru, Babaji Maharaj, and he's convinced now about Krishna consciousness, but wants to solidify that faith by understanding the various tattvas or subjects more deeply. And his Guru Maharaj has been answering his inquiries by explaining something called Dashamula, where Lord Chaitanya's instructions are summarized in 10 different verses. And the tattva that Vrajanath is trying to understand now is jiva tattva. And the living entity. And of course, Vrajanath previously was a great logician, so he wants to make sure that he thoroughly understands all the inquiries. And of course, that's the duty of a disciple, to raise one's doubts. Raising one's doubts means we want to understand things further. It's a sign of intelligence. And it's done in a submissive mood, not that you're wrong, but I don't understand. And therefore, with that faith and trust that there is someone who does have a higher vision and perception of reality than myself, who is experienced, learned, pure, perfect, he will be able to clarify the subject and remove my doubts. Now, the particular subject that's being discussed now is, of course, it's jiva tattva. And anyway, explain jiva tattva. Basically, there's different types of the entities created. The jiva is comes from the body of Mahavishnu, according to this. And somehow or other, in that eternal existence, I make this point again. Understanding the absolute reality is going to defy logic in one sense, because it's beyond cause and effect. It's the origin of everything. And that sense itself, the origin of everything that's eternally existing, that itself is hard to wrap the mind around. But the God is the origin of the jiva, and everything else, Jadmad, Yasya, Yataha, Dhanta Sutra, the first verse, Jadmad, Yasya, Yataha, is from who everything else is born or coming. And at the same time, the jiva is coming from God, but God is eternally existing. Just like the sun rays are coming from the sun, but without the sun rays, there's no sun. But the sun is the origin of the sun rays. And the jiva, coming from the tatastha shakti, the marginal potency, it's a very nice statement by my godbrother, by Sheshapu, tatastha, living entity is open to suggestion. And although he is part of God, he's infinitesimal part of God, he can be covered, he's open up to suggestion. And he can choose either the internal potency or the external potency. And this raises a point, which is a very, very valid point, and I myself even feel limited in understanding it completely. And I'm okay with that, because the whole concept of a living entity with choice, who's made a choice, but it really can't be in the jurisdiction of time because he's without beginning. So choice indicates a time, but he's without beginning. So when did that choice happen? Almost a choice cannot happen in time. Because he's without beginning. It's forever. Yet somehow or other, simultaneously, there's a choice. Before that choice, then where was the jiva? Or maybe jiva's eternal, but maybe unmanifest, and they're constantly manifesting. Okay, there's a choice. But what Vajranath is trying to wrap his mind around is why God could not make things in a different way where there wasn't so much suffering. And he's asking it in different ways. And the answer is, no, because there is suffering, it doesn't mean that God is not merciful. In one sense, it's how he demonstrates his mercy. That he's Karuna Mayi, but he's also Lila Mayi. He has all pastimes. And somehow the concept is presented, or the concept is there, that without God's pastimes in the material world, his exchange with it, he wouldn't have all Leelas. He wouldn't have all pastimes. He couldn't be Leela Mayi, full of all Leelas, because he would lack this very, very wonderful Leela, which is his exchange with the material energy, his creation, Atras, Argas, Bisargas, Jas, Dithir, Poshanam, Utaya, Mandatara, Ishakanta, Narodha, Mukti, all these aspects of God would not be there without the material energy. So it's really a tough one to wrap your mind around. Would God be more perfect without Atrasargas, Visargas, Chas, the Tir Potion, of all the leelas of the material world, creation, post-creation, Satir, Vaikuntha Vidya, liberation, Narodha, winding up of the material manifestation, Manus, the kings that regulate the material. Would he be more perfect somehow or other without that? And is there any other choice for a perfect and full God? And of course, anyway, it's just a very difficult concept. I'm just saying this because I myself haven't particularly been saying, oh yeah, so that's it. Okay, he's Lila Mighty, therefore all living entities have to suffer, otherwise you wouldn't be full, Lila Mighty. He would be lacking some pastimes, etc. But the other end, in God's infinite glory, this is also one of his glories. So how can it be denied? But anyway, I'm just going to read the Shastra and pray that my understanding becomes different, deeper, satisfied with my own undeniable experience through the sense of faith in the existence of God, and a God who is merciful, who is moving everything in the world to alleviate the suffering of the world, including giving the suffering itself, which is like, a needle to take out of a pinprick or a surgeon's operation. It's suffering to actually remove suffering. And then thrown within this is the glory of free choice and the love that free choice facilitates. God can't be petite pavana without those that are fallen. Somehow or other, despite this, the opportunity is there, and God makes every opportunity to enlighten us. But still, to me, the humble conclusion is my perspective is limited. And therefore, the expansion of my understanding comes by Shastra. Even if everything is not logically understood, still the faith is in Shastra because of the relationship with Shastra and the profundity of the knowledge it gives. And the perspective it gives and the realizations it gives. Then I reasonably trust Shastra, even if there are things in it that I can't 100% reconcile. Now, Vrajanath, he'd go on, is Maya Shakti the cause of our misfortune? Would the jivas have had to suffer like this if the omnipotent and omniscient Sri Krishna had kept Maya away from them? Good question. Babaji, Maya is a reflected transformation of Krishna's internal potency, Sarup Shakti, and it is like a fiery furnace where the jivas who are not qualified for Krishna's seva are chastised and made fit for the spiritual world. So obviously on that level, punishment, chastisement certainly can be merciful if it rectifies behavior. But again, the question was, why create some soul who has to be rectified. And the answer again, Leela Mahi God's full of varieties of Leelas. Maya is Krishna's maidservant in order to purify the jivas who have turned against Krishna. She punishes them, gives appropriate therapy, and purifies them. The infinitesimal jiva has forgotten that he is an eternal servant of Krishna. And for this offense, Maya, taking the form of a witch, Pishaschi, punishes him. The material world is like a jail, and Maya is the jailer who imprisons the estranged jivas and punishes them. A king constructs a prison house for the benefit of his subjects, and in the same way Bhagavan has shown his immense mercy towards the jivas by making this prison-like material world and appointing Maya as its custodian. So an analogy, how the jail, which is incarceration, is still a government agency and meant to do good for the citizens, not just the giving a place where those socially disruptive elements will not harm the public, but a correction institution. It's supposed to correct one. And therefore, when punishment is used for that purpose, it's also mercy. Vajanat, if this material world is a prison, it also requires some shackles. What are they? So somehow Vrajanath has exhausted his inquiries, and I guess he's understood, or understood as far as he capacity, why there is Maya. Of course, Maya is only our attitude more than anything else. So that goes to the free will of living entity. So what are the shackles? Babaji, Maya incarcerates the delinquent jivas with three types of shackles. Those made of goodness, sattva-gun, those made of passion, vajra-gun, and those made of ignorance, tamagun. These fetters bind the jiva, whether his inclination is tamasika, rajasika, or even sattvika. Shackles may be made of different metals, such as gold, silver, iron, but that makes no difference to the pain of being bound by them. So the modes of material nature, guna also means ropes, one is bound to them very subtly. One is limited by them very, very subtly. So jails or shackles are meant to restrict one. So in this material world, the modes of nature restrict one. Two, an illusory concept of enjoyment according to your proclivity. Even the mode of goodness, there can be attachment to goodness, which mixes it with passion. So, and one is shackled by certain influences. That shackle us to the false ego. Yesterday at Borijan's class, he described the false ego is the conception I'm in the center and that everything is around me for my pleasure. So that's the real shackle, that conception, that desire. That's what restricts one from the world of the good citizen. It's very, very subtle, but still. Even Narada Muni was attached to the mode of goodness. But it's still based on the false ego, and therefore it bounds one. You shouldn't look at bondage as so much a physical restriction. but a restriction in consciousness. Because after all, God is omniscient. So the spiritual world is here right now. The spiritual world is here right now. It's not a place we can travel to. It's another dimension which we can enter. But it's right here. So that's the like the prison house, there's the outside where the good people stay. The good people are in another dimension. So what are the walls that are keeping us from the other dimension? It's the false ego. The desire to be the center, which puts one in the illusion that one is. And it's all connected with the modes. When one is liberated, it doesn't mean he doesn't have any desire. It means he's not affected by it. Obviously, even if someone becomes a pure devotee, he has certain likes and dislikes and certain tastes. And some of those tastes can be used in Krishna's service. Like you like a particular food, okay? So you can honor a particular type of prasadam. That's fine. But that may not be coming from the soul. But a liberated person, he's just not affected by these things. And one who is bound is conditioned by them. They're forced to act as the center, whether it is I want to enjoy the forest, I want to enjoy the city, I want to enjoy the country, I want to enjoy the bar. So now he asks, Prajna, how can the shackles of Maya bind the atomic conscious jivas? Babaji, objects of this material world cannot touch or attract spiritual objects. But as soon as the jiva develops the ignorant conception that he is the enjoyer of Maya, the false ego, his atomic spiritual form is covered by the subtle body made of false ego. This is how the shackles of Maya bind his legs. The jivas having a sattvic ego reside in higher planets and are called devatas. Their legs are bound by sattvic shackles made of gold. Rajasika jivas have a mixture of the propensity to the devas and to the human beings and are confined by rajasik shackles made of silver, and the tamasic jivas, who are mad to taste jadananda, bliss from dull matter, are bound in tamasika iron shackles. Once the jivas are bound in these shackles, they cannot leave the prison. Even though they suffer various types of miseries, they remain in captivity. Captivity, restriction. We're not free. We're confined. We're confined by our desires, the conceptions they foster, and the energy that it attracts. And we can't go to the spiritual world. We can't enter Vrindavan with false ego. Even in the earthly planet. Please explain. Okay. Babaji, initially the jiva performs karma to provide himself with his desired sense pleasure in accordance with his material propensities. Then he performs karma activity to try and dispel the miseries that result from being bound by the shackles of Maya. You perform karma activity to enjoy, and then you perform karma activity to dispel the misery of that enjoyment, because the enjoyment bounds us to the material conception of life, and therefore we feel the pains of the world more difficult. What is misery? Misery is when things don't move according to our plan for being the center. That's misery. So we perform activity to get sense pleasure, but it binds us to a world of duality and fear. Rajanath, please explain the first type of karma in detail. The coverings of gross material body has six stages, namely birth, existence, growth, creating byproducts, decline, and death. These six transformations are inherent attributes of the gross body, and hunger and thirst are the hardships that it undergoes. The pious jiva is situated in the material body, is controlled by eating, sleeping, and sensual activities, as his material sense desires dictate. In order to enjoy material comforts, he engages in a variety of activities that are born of his material desires. During the course of his lifetime, he performs 10 types of purificatory ceremonies, punya samskaras, and 18 other sacrificial rites in the Vedas. His intention is to accumulate pious credits through these karmas so he can enjoy material pleasure by taking birth in a Brahmin or other high-class family in this world and thereafter, have godly pleasures in the higher planets. Thus he undertakes the path of karma. In contrast, impious conditioned jivas take shelter of adharma and enjoy sense gratification, religiously, but performing various types of sinful activities. Jivas in the first category attain the higher planets and enjoy celestial pleasures as a result of their activities. Jivas in the second category go to hell because of their sinful activities, and after suffering a variety of miseries there, take birth on earth again. Thus the jiva, bound in maya and entangled in the cycle of karma, wanders hither and thither seeking to enjoy sense gratification. Intermittently, he also enjoys some temporary pleasures as a result of pious activities and suffers miseries because of his papa, sins. Rajanath, I don't know, I'm reading too much. Let's just go back and put this in context. So he asks, is Maya Shakti the cause of our misfortune? The jivas had to suffer that if the omnipotent and omniscient Krishna had kept Maya away. And he describes that Maya is like the prison house. It's merciful both for the citizens who want to enjoy free from disturbance, and for those who cause the disturbance by rectifying them. Then what are the shackles? The shackles are the three modes of material nature, which bind the living entity, put him in the captivity, away from the free and normal life of surrender and service to Krishna. And how can these shackles of Maya bind the atomic jiva souls? Because once one tries to be the enjoyer, then he becomes conditioned by his attachments, and conditioned by the objects of this attachment in the world, to act in a way where one stays within the limited parameters of the material world. Then he asks, what sort of karma did the jiva perform while in Maya's prison? Well, two, he tries to attain his desired pleasures based on his false ego, and two, performs activities to be free from the shackles. And then Vrajanath says, explain the first type of karma. So the first type of karma is he tries to act for his own sense enjoyment. That's the first type of activity. So explain this. And he explains how there are different transformations of the body and even a pious living entity is controlled by his desires. And then to enjoy even higher, he can perform certain types of purificatory rites to get a higher birth and a higher level of enjoyment, or he can just perform without regulation and go to hell. So now he says, describe the second type of karma. And I guess the second type of karma activities to dispel the misery. So the jiva situated in the gross body undergoes immense suffering due to hardship of the gross body, and he performs various type of karmas in attempt to minimize these miseries. He collects various foods and drinks to assuage his hunger and thirst, and he toils arduously to earn money so that he can buy food easily. He collects warm clothes to protect himself from the cold, marries to satisfy his desire for sense pleasure, and works hard to maintain his family and children and fulfill their needs. He takes medicine to cure diseases of the gross body, fights with others, and goes to courts of law to protect his material assets. He indulges in various sinful activities such as fighting, enviousness, stealing, and other misdemeanors because he is controlled by the six foes, namely kama, lust, krodha, anger, mada, intoxication, moha, illusion, matsarya, envy, and bhaya, fear. All these activities are to alleviate his sufferings. Thus, the entire life of the illusion jiva is wasted in trying to fulfill his desires and to avoid suffering. Vrajanath, wouldn't Maya's purpose have been served if she had only covered the jiva with the subtle body? The gross body is also necessary because the subtle body cannot perform work. Desires develop in the subtle body because of the activities the jiva performs in his gross body, and the jiva receives another gross body that is suitable to fulfill those desires. So God has organized the subtle body, the mind, intelligence, the false ego, develops develops the desires, and then there's a gross body. It's like a vehicle that enables one to carry it out. Vrajanath, what is the connection between karma and its fruits? According to the Mimamsa school of thought, Ishvara cannot award the fruits of karma because he is only an imaginary object. The followers of this school say that performing karma produced a tattva called a purva, and this apurva gives the fruits of all the karmas. Is this true? Babaji, the followers of Mimamsa school do not know the actual meaning of the Vedas. They have a very basic understanding that the Vedas generally prescribe various types of sacrifice, and they have concocted a philosophy based on this, but their doctrine is not found anywhere in the Vedas. On the contrary, the Vedas state very clearly that Ishvara awards all the fruits of karma. So people who hold or profess the view of karma mimamsa, they believe that everything you happen is a result only of your work, and that there's no need to, I've met people, there's no need to worship God, because he's not awarding your fruits. Rather, your own activities, if you perform certain rituals, et cetera, you'll get a certain result. So what's the need of worshiping God? This is even one of the philosophies that baby Krishna spoke to his father to try to stop the Indra Yajna. What's the use of worshiping God? Of course, Krishna was purposely, in a very cute way,
on the lap of his father, a seven-year-old boy, two-way trying to stop the yogya, and he was even preaching a bogus philosophy. And one of them is karma mamsa, that you work and you get the results. And Prabhupada said, no, it doesn't work that way. People are very good parents, and they train their child, and the child can grow up to be a criminal. Well, very good parents, and they give good education, good care, but still, then someone who's uneducated, who doesn't do that work, they somehow get into the university. The parents, you know, they've even neglected the child, but somehow or other. So it's not completely based on your works alone. Okay, Vrajanath, why have you said that karma is beginningless? The root of all karma is the desire to perform karma, and the root cause of this desire is avidya, ignorance. Avidya is forgetfulness of the truth. I am eternal servant of Krishna. And it does not have its origin in mundane time. Wow. I was saying that, wasn't I? How is karma beginningless? This is based on avidya. Forgetfulness, I am the eternal servant of Krishna. And it does not have its origin in mundane time. How to understand that? Rather, it originates in the tattvastha junction of the spiritual and material worlds. That's why karma does not have its beginning in mundane time and is therefore called beginningless. Vrajanath, what is the difference between Maya and Avidya? Maya is a Shakti of Krishna. Sri Krishna has created the material universe through her and has instigated her to purify the jivas who are averse to him. Maya has two aspects, Avidya and Pradhan. Avidya is related to the jivas, whereas Pradhan is related to inert matter. The entire inert material world has originated from Pradhan, where the jivas' desire to perform material activities originates in avidya. There are other two divisions of Maya, namely vidya, knowledge, and avidya, forgetfulness, both of which are related to the jiva. Avidya binds the jiva, where vidya liberates him. The faculty of avidya keeps working as long as the punishable jiva continues to fear Krishna. But when he becomes favorable to Krishna, this is replaced by the faculty of vidya. Ramayan and so on are only particular activities of the tendency for knowledge, vidya. When intelligence first develops, the jivas try to engage in auspicious activities. When intelligence has matured, spiritual knowledge manifests. Avidya covers the jiva, and the jiva removes, and vidya removes that covering. Anyway, are there any questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Gail here.
Hi, both, Gail. Thank you.
I have a couple of questions, if I have time. I want to go back to this concept of conditioning of the soul. So, let's say a jiva decides to engage in some enjoyment. Let's say eating without offering first. And by that act of non-devotion, he becomes conditioned. So how would you actually define conditioned in that context? What does it mean there to say that he becomes conditioned?
Conditioned means that you're forced to do an activity beyond your own will and volition. So you're conditioned to do something, just like, it's like impulsive responses. It's not based on your free will, or it influences you by forcing you to act in a particular way. One is conditioned to lying. One is conditioned to overeating. One is conditioned to being lazy. One is conditioned to love to be in the forest.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
so it's not based on our thoughtfulness. It's based on our mind.
Okay,
so it really conditions. Yeah.
Yeah. So that sounds like that subtle karmic reaction that happens, right? When you do something, one of the karmic reactions that takes place is that you get an increased propensity to do it again.
Yeah, you become conditioned. And desires are in three modes, and they're mixed. And there are three ways to be independent of God. One is the desire to not act. One is the desire to... Yeah, there are different flavors of enjoyment. One is inertia. One is kind of ambition, and one is attracted to peace.
Attracted to
you're
what?
Still conditioned to it. Peace.
What was the last one?
I want to be peaceful. Peaceful.
Oh, peace. Uh-huh.
And you're conditioned. You're conditioned by that. Even though, you know, you're supposed to go out and you know, do something active, right? But you don't want to do it because it's too much anxiety. But it may be the service of God. It may be your dharma. You know, you're conditioned. So you just retire to the forest. But when actually your service is elsewhere. So you become attached to something and you act beyond you're acting impulsively rather
mm-hmm.
than thoughtfully.
Mhm. Okay. Thank you. And just one other thing was concerning those who adhere to the Mimamsa philosophy. I mean, it sounds very atheistic, but at the same time, they seem to feel that, you know, by certain rituals or whatever, they will get certain results. So if they feel that it is only by performing certain types of work that you get certain results, then I wonder who they would say is the one that determined what kind
anyway,
of work.
I don't know exactly the details of the karma mamamsa, mm-hmm. other than the way the world is constructed is your endeavors and therefore the rituals you perform, you know, are the cause of your activities. And there's no interference of the divine. I mean, just like there's a philosophy called deism where people believe God created the world, but then he has really nothing to do with it now. So I don't know. If it has a particular theistic conclusion or atheistic conclusion in terms of karma mamsa, you know, whether God set up the world with a certain system and just do that system, and
mm-hmm.
by doing that system, the results are automatically to come. There's nothing beyond that. But obviously, Krishna didn't like that in terms of even the Govardhan Puja.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it's atheistic or it just has a theistic conception where God is no longer involved. Or God has created the world where his karma is absolute and not his will. I mean, I'll have to look that up. I mean, that's a, you know, I don't really, haven't studied karma mimamsa.
Yeah, I mean,
only that conception.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that I really wanted to go deep into it. I was just saying.
It's just like yoga. Yoga has a conception of God, but there's no conception of his involvement in anything. The goal is to realize the self.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can achieve that by worshiping God, but it doesn't say what the connection of God is to your point of liberation. And understand too that the six darshans are not specifically mentioned in the Vedas as particular schools, but people who found different aspects, they practiced them. And whether or not when they extracted that school, whether they have the whole context or not, I don't know. Okay, Gail. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Anybody else say hello today? Okay, then I'm going to head out. Bunch of cultists.